to sleep. Hang on. The men had the hide unfolded now, and other Ikori were grabbing hold of its sides. Just a bit longer. Tell me more about Molly, or the whiskey. How is your end?
Wouldn't have gotten shot if I was sober.
His eyes fluttered open and then closed. But they were supposed to be gone, and... He coughed again, and didn't finish. Robert? I asked. Robert! I put my hand to his throat to check for a pulse, but already knew there'd be none. Gideon gently closed the man's eyes and eased him to the floor, murmuring, Orinial, light the way. Orinial, light the way, I echoed, surprised at the grief I felt for someone I didn't know. A shout from below drew us back, and we saw that the Ikori had the large hide open and ready. Six men stood around it and positioned themselves in a spot below the window that would be easy to aim for. I started to tell Gideon that we should still push Robert's body out, but a brilliant flash suddenly lit up my periphery. Sparks had finally landed on the hay, and fire instantly flared across the loft. It was at my feet in the blink of an eye. Leaving Robert, Gideon and I both climbed up into the window frame. Jump! I ordered Gideon. You first! Damn it, Gideon, this is no time for... Ah! So help me, Gideon pushed me out the window. I screamed the whole way down, but landed safely, if not gracefully, biting my tongue and bouncing a bit when I struck the hide. One of the Ikori pulled me off, and then they shouted for Gideon. He jumped, just as the whole building began to crumple. The sudden spread of the fire to the loft was too much for the barn. The flames had already consumed most of one long side, and with the deterioration of this end, the structural integrity gave out. The Ikori saw the barn's collapse coming and didn't even bother getting Gideon out of the hide when he landed. They just wrapped him up and carried him along as they ran away. We managed to flee the worst of it as the barn fell in upon itself. Wood and ash and cinders spread out in a great cloud. I dropped to my knees and covered my face, not getting up until someone touched my shoulder.
Tamsin, are you all right?
Gideon put an arm around me and led me to where the other Ikori were assembling. Everyone seemed to be talking at once, all in Ikori, and I couldn't really tell what was going on. I'm okay, I told Gideon, covering a cough. I just... Gideon, look at you! Soot darkened his face, and nearly all of his coat's left sleeve had been burned away. The once white shirt underneath was browned and tattered, but the flames must have been smothered before getting much farther. Gideon looked down in surprise, apparently noticing his state for the first time.
Blessed be Euros. That could have been a lot worse.
Seeing he was otherwise okay, I felt no remorse at lightly punching his other arm.
Not by much. Six! What were you thinking? What were you thinking? I saw a clear way to get him in and out, and I saw a clear way to come save you, Gideon retorted. I didn't need saving. Well, yes, but not when you first decided to come. You should have stayed out here where it was bloody safe.
His eyes widened.
How could I do that and leave you in danger, Tamsin? I love you.
I stared, unable to answer both because of shock and renewed coughing. When I recovered myself, I could only stare. Gideon, at a loss as well, stared back. We were saved, sort of, when Orla strode up with her hands on her hips.
Tamsin Wright, if you were one of my people...
I'm not, I interrupted, slowly turning from Gideon. And I'm okay, so don't scold me. I had to try and get that man out, but his wound was too serious. He died before I jumped. Orla shook her head, angry, but also relieved.
I'm just glad you didn't die, either of you. Getting us a Lorandian hostage wasn't worth the risk.
I did it because he was human, not because he was Lorandian. Amidst all the panic, I'd almost overlooked what I had noticed in my foolhardy stunt. I talked to him.
Yes, said Orla. Beyond her, I heard shouts as Lieutenant Harper's men joined us, returning from scouting for any attackers. I blinked away more smoke as I replayed that last scrap of conversation I'd had with the man in the loft. His name, his accent, none of it was made up. He'd been on death's doorway, barely able to speak, let alone craft a conspiracy. And he actually wasn't Lorandian. He was Asphridian. My heart sank as I looked into the faces of those who'd supported my theory that Lorandians were staging attacks in disguise. This attack actually was carried out by Asphridians. Chapter 29. It was raining when we reached Qadan, the end of our journey on the East Sister. Qadan was a small village that made its living as a crossroads for travellers. Not far to the west was Kershit, home of Orla's betrothed. Sail farther south, and the river split, with one branch eventually going to the sea, and the other to the Heart's Blood. And of course, less than a day to the east was what I had come here for, the border of Denim Colony. Most of Orla's people were travelling on to Kershit. Our river party had included a handful of non-Ikori, and they were all going different ways. Some were taking the road to Cape Triumph with my friends and the Grey Gull's crew, and we pooled our resources together to hire wagons and horses in Qadan to transport our collective goods. The Qadan Ikori had arrangements with colonists in a town farther into Denim to tag-team these sorts of escorts. As our belongings were transferred from the barges to wagons, I pulled the hood of my cloak over my head to shield some of the rain. It was a coarse, black wool cloak given to me by Bernard Glover when my old one had been damaged in the fire. The flowered dress Jago had given me had likewise been burned past repair, and I wore a bluish-grey one in the heir's style. Dinah, with triumphant condescension, had given it to me, saying we'd settle the cost in Cape Triumph. "No," I told her. "You can have it back as soon as we arrive." Orla had offered me replacement clothing too, but as much as I loathed Grashand fashion, it was still easier for me to wear in denim than something obviously Ikori. A couple of crates were set down next to me, and I moved out of the way. These were labelled in both Ikori runes and Asphridian, and I did a double take when I saw them. Jacob Robinson, Orchard End, Rushwick, Denim Colony. The Ikori workers who had deposited them were already headed off for their next load. "Wait," I called. "What are these? Why are they going to Jago?"
"Because they're his."
A hunter who'd travelled with us walked up to me. He lived on the outskirts of West Grashand and had been introduced to me simply as Mr. Elkhart.
"I'm making sure they get dropped off at his place, since he couldn't come."
I ran my hands over the wet letters. Just touching Jago's name sent chills through me. His place?
Well, almost his place. Over in Rushwick. He kind of owns it, kind of leases it. He should have most of it paid, after this season's trade, assuming this delay doesn't slow anything down.
I'm happy for him. I dropped my hand. He's worked hard for it. He'll be able to start his horse business soon.
Yep, genius idea that. Most wouldn't have the patience to see it through. Easier to raise and sell ordinary workhorses. But as this country gets more settled, the rich start looking for something to do. Fancy racehorses will be all the rage, and he'll be on the cutting edge of it.
Mr. Elkhart winked at me.
You're off to marry some rich fellow, aren't you? Maybe Robinson will cut you a deal on a horse, or two.
I looked away. I don't know.
Well, he must have a soft spot for the lot of you, or just likes your pretty faces. It's because of you girls he didn't come, right? He gave you his spots.
His words brought up the memory of Jago going to a hunter he knew, and I dragged my gaze from the address. You're Lewis, right? Jago's friend.
Lewis Elkhart, at your service.
He gave me a mock bow.
And if you're his friend, you're my friend. I'm not taking the road all the way to Cape Triumph, but if you need anything before I turn north, let me know.
He left, but I lingered near the boxes until they were finally loaded up. By then, the Colonel Ikori were ready to go on their way, and Orla summoned me.
Farewell again, Tamsin.
Her smile was as wry as ever. It doesn't seem like many things have gone your way in the time I've known you. I hope that changes. I summoned a mental image of Mary's face and smiled. Only one thing has to go my way. I'll deal with the rest. Thank you for everything you've done for me. I wouldn't be standing this close to Denham if not for you. I'll always be grateful for that. But I've never understood why you did it.
Impulse. Instinct. I don't know what to call it. I was amused watching all you pretty little birds flutter and fret on the way to Constancy. But when I started watching the way they flocked around you, I was intrigued. It's like I told you before. You're good with people. That's going to become increasingly important in the near future, I think.
Her blue eyes lifted to the bustling mix of Ikori and Asphridians going about their business.
I remember what you said. My conscience isn't contingent on someone else's. It brings to mind an old proverb of ours.
If you're on the path of right and someone crosses it with wrong, you don't need to turn. Build a bridge over their path and continue on your way.
She turned back to me in amazement and then burst out laughing.
Jago told you that one?
Yes. It's what we're going to need, all of us, if we're ever going to get a lasting peace. Listening to each other will be key, but overcoming grudges and a history of wrongs has to be in there too. That's why I thought you'd be a useful person to help. And that was a hunch that paid off.
Did it? I asked pointedly.
Her smile faded a little. No one blames you for what happened at that settlement, Tamsin. And just because Asphridians attacked there doesn't mean Lorandians didn't attack the others in the north.
I couldn't muster an immediate response. The fire at the fishing camp had cast a pall over the rest of our trip south. She was right that no one had blamed me, or even the other Asphridians travelling with us, but I could see some of the Ikori looking at us a little differently. Those who had been open and sociable earlier in the trip now became guarded.
None of it matters if it can't be proved, and the only thing we have proof of is that the Lorandians robbed me in Grashand. That won't stop your people from going to war if pushed far enough.
Then I'll have to stop them, unless it's warranted.
But something still feels off to me.
This mystery isn't settled yet. I'll miss having you looking into it, but I'm also happy for your success.
She smoothed back hair that had escaped her sloppy bun, but that just made a few more pop out.
If I can ever do anything for you, let me know. You have a lot of friends and admirers here.
I shrugged. Oh, people just like me because I ran into a burning building.
Orla laughed and startled me with a giant hug.
Goodbye, Tamsin. I hope you find happiness.
Ah, sorry. I got ash on your cheek.
No, the other one.
I rubbed it where my face had brushed her jacket in the hug. She'd worn the same clothes since the fire, and everything was covered in dirt and ash.
Are you going to change before Khurshid? I asked delicately.
You mean before I meet my betrothed?
She glanced at her sooty attire and ran a hand over her hair again, messing it up further.
No. If he can't take me like this, then he shouldn't bother taking me at all.
Safe journeys.
Travelling by road was jarring after the river ride. True, there were no rapids to deal with, or captains scolding us for moving around too much, but our progress was so slow by comparison. Our caravan lumbered along, people, animals, and wagons creeping toward Cape Triumph. A few days after Kadan, Lewis Elkhart bid me farewell when we reached a highway branching north.
Going to drop Robinson's stuff off in Rushwick on my way to Coatesville. I'll eventually swing through Cape Triumph later in the spring, so maybe we'll cross paths. If a fine lady like you will even acknowledge the likes of me.
Of course I will. I stood on my tiptoes and gave him a kiss on the cheek, which thoroughly delighted him and horrified the heirs. He separated his wagon from the rest and turned his horses onto the lonely-looking road. Watching them disappear made me feel like I was getting even farther from Jago. A few miles later, we reached the small town that served as Kadan's counterpart.
Here, the Ikori who'd been hired on at the East Sister turned everything over to colonial guides and went back home. The heirs and a few of the others in our caravan were thrilled to be free of Ikori. Also joining us was a handful of travellers who'd been staying at the local inn and were on their way east. Among that group was a young man named Frank Brennan, who came from a wealthy planting family based in Cape Triumph. And suddenly, it was like someone had thrown cold water over those of us in the glittering court. We'd never forgotten why we'd come to Adoria. We'd talked about it often on the ship, in Constancy, in Kerniel. It was always with us, a fixed star leading the way to our future. But even if you could say with absolute certainty you were going to be the wife of one of Cape Triumph's wealthy and elite men, that sentiment could feel a little empty if you were scrubbing floors in Dinah Cole's kitchen. My friends had always fawned over Gideon, flirting in a subdued way and trying to earn his admiration. It was understandable, given his kindness and how he looked. But, as had been discussed that very first day in Constancy, he was never viewed as a real marriage candidate. Frank Brennan was. He had money. He had a powerful name. He had cultivated tastes. He had beautiful riding clothes. And he knew who we were.
"You're the last glittering court girls? No! I thought you drowned at sea."
"Mr. Thorne didn't get my letter," I asked. My heart sank.
"Not that I've heard of, though maybe that's changed while I was out of town. Last I knew, everyone thought you were gone. For good."
That grim thought gave us pause. Me, especially. After all, I was the only one with a lot of friends back in Cape Triumph. This group had never met Adelaide, Mira, or anyone else from Blue Spring. Knowing people believe you were dead, gone from this world, it was chilling. And heartbreaking.
"Did they give us a funeral, at least?" Polly asked.
I couldn't tell if she was trying to be funny.
"Or a nice memorial?"
"If they did, it was nothing public," Frank said.
He was wearing a green brocade riding coat and led a lively black stallion.
"Maybe they did among themselves. Nothing really seemed to change the way they went on, though. I was travelling when they had their opening ball, but my friends said it was quite the affair."
We got as many details out of him as he had about the glittering court's current status. He'd heard of a couple of engagements, one was a Blue Spring girl, and he knew who Adelaide was, which didn't surprise me. When I asked about Mira, he said he didn't know her. When I added that she was Dominican, he said,
"Oh, yes, I heard about her."
And that was it. Frank was never alone for the rest of the trip. When he didn't have a small flock of admirers fluttering around him, he'd take the time to walk alone with some girl or another. He realized quickly the lucky position he was in. He was in the market for a wife, and he had us all to himself before we went on display for the rest of the city's bachelors. It was almost comical. He showed off to my friends. They showed off to him. They, demurely, investigated him and his prospects, and he tried to find out about each of us. I was no different. Frank wasn't anyone I'd heard of beforehand, nor did I know if he was dead set on marrying a blushing virgin, but as a respectable prospect, he had to be treated appropriately. That, and I had to start getting back in the habit of charming others, no matter how much I still pined for Jago. After observing Frank for a few days, however, I realized fawning all over him like the others did actually wasn't the best method to interest him.
"Tamsin,"
he called one afternoon as our party took its lunch break.
"I've hardly had a chance to talk to you. Come, eat with me. You can share this lovely olive spread Archibald set out with my brioche."
Archibald was his manservant, the one who painstakingly set up Frank's luxurious tent each night and pressed each day's new riding coat. Today was indigo, almost a perfect match for Frank's eyes.
"I certainly will not."
I didn't look up from our ration box, where I was sorting out my friend's allotted portions of rye bread and some sort of hard white cheese. "If I sit down with you for any length of time, Mr. Brennan, it will not be while I'm in a worsted working dress with my hair barely brushed,
and I certainly hope you will be able to do better than the side of a road and olive spread from a jar that took your man all of 10 seconds to open. I won't waste my time or yours with a display that is anything less than our best. But thank you just the same for the lovely invitation. Frank stared open-mouthed. He wasn't used to being dismissed by women around here or back home, I was certain. And it enthralled him. For the rest of the day, he kept sneaking glances at me that were equal parts disbelief and fascination. "How did you do that?" demanded Maria later in the evening. "We've all been tossing our hair back, putting out our wittiest lines, and praising everything he does. Then you come along with one sharp-tongued rejection, and now he can't stop mooning over you." I was settling down to write a letter and gave her a quick grin before putting pen to paper. "It's like you girls always say, I get things done." Gideon overheard and waited patiently until I finished writing. I'd been so distraught about discovering the Asphridian attacker that Gideon's declaration at the fishing camp had almost slipped my mind. He never mentioned it again, and I didn't know if it had simply been an impulsive sentiment born from the moment's heightened emotion, or if it was sincere and he was simply embarrassed about admitting it after I'd told him in constancy that there couldn't be anything between us. My gloomy mood had caused me to withdraw into myself for the end of the trip, so I'd had little chance to speak to him or anyone else much. "Do you actually like him?" Gideon asked. I looked over at where several of my friends sat around a campfire. Frank sat with them, of course. He was animatedly telling a story about how his brother nearly proposed to the wrong girl at a masquerade ball after indulging in too much champagne. Frank knew how to play to an audience, hitting all the punchlines at exactly the right time, and I found myself smiling at the outlandish tale too. As compelling as the story was, the background details were just as noteworthy, like how the masquerade had taken place at his family's estate, hosting 100 people. The plentiful champagne had been a rare Lorandian type. Frank Brennan had money, no question. He had looks, too, which weren't a necessity, but weren't something I minded. "I don't dislike him," I mused. "He's pretty much a perfect example of what the glittering court goes for, though this really wasn't the setting I'd planned to be meeting suitors in. I'm not at my best." "I don't know. I mean, I've never seen you wearing a silk gown in a ballroom, but after everything that's happened..." In the lantern's soft glow, Gideon's smile held its usual radiance. "I feel like I've seen you at your best. You should have a husband who appreciates that. Hopefully I can find one." Gideon eyed the group by the campfire. "And you think you'll find him among Cape Triumph's elite, critiquing champagne in some tacky drawing room?" The image, coming from Gideon especially, made me laugh. "Well, we'll see. I do think I'll find someone in one of those tacky drawing rooms who can help my family with our bills." "And you'll give up love and connection for that?" "In an instant. They matter more than everything else, and I'll do whatever it takes, be whatever it takes, for their security." "It's a shame," he said, after long moments. "You shouldn't have to sacrifice one thing for another. You should have it all. Being able to take care of your family, someone you can love, the freedom to be yourself." "I nearly had that with Jago," I thought wistfully. "All but the one that matters." "To Gideon," I said, "believe me, I want all those things if possible. I'll let you know if I find him." "Well, what about me?" I'd started to pack up my paper and now stopped in surprise. "You... what?" Gideon was angled away from me, so I couldn't make out his expression. He took a deep breath. "Me? As your husband? Will you..." Slowly, he turned around. "Tamsin, will you marry me?" Chapter 30. Gideon. For the briefest of moments, I wondered if he was teasing me, but the earnestness on his pale face left no question. Apparently, his declaration at the camp hadn't been a spur-of-the-moment impulse. "Oh, Gideon, we talked about this.
You're wonderful, truly. Worth a million Frank Brennans, to be honest. But I have to marry someone who can pay my contract fee and my other expenses.
I can, he stammered. I have it. The money.
Again, it should have been a joke. And again, his expression insisted it wasn't.
How? An Orthodox priest wouldn't have that kind of money, let alone...
One from the heirs of Euros, he supplied, with a rueful smile.
You're right. But remember, I wasn't always one. Before that, I was a spoiled boy living a shallow and decadent life. What I didn't tell you is that I was also a spoiled boy whose father is one of the landed gentry. I shot to my feet. Stop it, Gideon. I didn't believe it before, but now I know you are joking.
He held up a hand.
It's the truth. May the angels strike me down if it's not. I grew up in the Oakmont district. Have you been there?
Sure, I scoffed. Delivering laundry, one of Ma's regulars went to a debut there, and we had to deliver her satin ball gown.
When was it? I could have been at that party. I told you, I went to lots and burned through my parents' money. They had every right to cut me off, but they kept hoping I'd straighten up one day. Sailing to Adoria to join the heirs wasn't exactly what they had in mind, but they were so thrilled to see me focus on anything that they continued sending the stipend my brothers and I get from our grandfather's estate. It's not as much as if I'd stayed in Usfro and played an active part in running the land, but it's covered my expenses in Grashand for my education and board, and it would cover your contract fee. There's a bank in Watchful that's got some of it invested for me. It'd take a bit of time to send for it and get through the paperwork, but once it was freed, I'm certain I could help your family and give you a comfortable life. I can't promise champagne and tacky drawing rooms, but I swear you'd never want for love, respect, and acceptance. Frozen, I could only stare and try to process his words. Realizing I was gaping, I finally clamped my jaw shut and turned around. Gideon, no, I can't do... No. I stalked off into the darkness, too overcome to continue. Tamsin! He caught up easily and clasped my hand to stop me. Wait, please. I'm serious. I want to marry you. I love you. I shook my head, though we'd gone far enough from the lantern that I wasn't sure he saw that. Gideon, I meant it when I said you're wonderful, and I care about you a lot, but what? If you care about me, and I have the money that'll help you, what's the problem? Are you hoping to find someone with more money, or someone you like better than me? The tremulous note in his voice, that last bit, struck me deeply. No, it's not that. It's just at this point, well, I came here treating marriage as a sort of business, and I feel like I need to stick to my original plan. Love and romance are wonderful things, but I can't risk getting distracted by them.
Like with Jacob Robinson.
I went very still. What are you talking about?
It's okay. Gideon's voice held its familiar gentleness. I saw the way you looked at him, and I heard the way he talked about you when we went back to Constancy. But I'm guessing if he hadn't been detained at the fort, you would still have cut him off.
Gideon, it's complicated. I don't have any hard feelings toward him. He's a good man, and I don't blame you for having to end things because of his money, or lack thereof. Like you said, you came to Adoria for a specific reason. But I'm guessing it still hurts, and that it's probably easier considering your marriage prospects impartially now, keeping your heart out of it altogether.
Gideon didn't know the exact details of how things had ended with Jago and me, but he had, I realized, figured out what even I hadn't. I was slipping back into my old role of focused, goal-oriented Tamsin, because choosing a husband from an emotionally detached place meant I couldn't get hurt again. When I stayed silent, Gideon continued,
"But I'm telling you, you don't have to make that sacrifice. Marry me, and you can have it all. It's okay if you're not madly in love with me right now, but the fact that you care at all, and we have such a good friendship, is more than you'll have with some stranger you meet in a drawing room.
This is the kind of basis we can use to build something beautiful. Don't resign yourself to unhappiness.
I rubbed my eyes and slowly turned back toward the wagon, Gideon falling into step beside me.
I don't want you making a rash decision, I told him. A lot's happened in your world recently. You gave up a life of luxury in Asphro to come to the heirs, and now you're leaving them. You don't need me right now. You need time to figure things out.
But that's exactly it, he said, voice suddenly growing sure and eager. You're the reason I figured things out. Long before I found out the council had lied to me about Jacob, you were making me question what I was being told.
As we neared the light again, he stopped in front of me, so that I'd have to look up into his face. He took my hands.
Tamsin, you are the bravest, cleverest person I've ever met. Your compassion is boundless, and you aren't afraid to stand up for your beliefs. I came to Adoria, hoping I'd find people who could cut through the superficiality and excess that taints the world. And it turns out, one of them found me. Do you really want to marry someone like that?
He gestured across the camp, and almost on cue, we heard Frank call,
Archibald, did you lay out my jacket with the red pinstripes? I wanted the one with larger red stripes. Don't go to bed until it's pressed and ready.
I winced. That's kind of an extreme example. Gideon leaned closer.
Tamsin, I think we could do wonderful things together. You've got such a gift for helping me bring my ideas to life. We could create sermons, no, larger messages and ideals, to share and guide others along the path Euros intended.
I have no calling, Gideon. I'm not going to pretend for a second I do.
He smiled, and it reached his eyes, making them shine.
You say that, but I think you have been called. And that's what I'm realizing. Being righteous and good isn't about how many passages you read or how modestly you dress. That's as empty as the gold robes and repetitive services I hated in Asphro. The real test of who we are is in how we live, how we embody those principles in the world each day. That's what you do. And that's why I want you by my side, to find a home and a community.
He hesitated.
To create a better understanding of the divine, to create a new sort of church that gets to the heart of what matters without the strictness of the heirs.
Your own church? Gideon, that's... Wow, that's amazing, I said sincerely. I think you could do some really good things.
And with you, I could do some really great things. Please, Tamsin.
We could hear the others disbanding. He released my hands, but his voice grew more urgent.
Let me prove to you that you can have it all, that opening your heart doesn't lead to pain. Be my partner in a new venture, not just someone's pretty trinket. You're a woman without equal. You deserve the world.
My heart racing, I glanced over my shoulder and then back to him. His words were thrilling and beautiful. Not enough to make me instantly get over Jago, of course, but they did give me hope. A minister's wife wasn't what I'd envisioned, but nothing was anymore. Was it so crazy to marry him? It might not be an opulent lifestyle, but it would surpass what I'd had in Asphro and ensure my marriage plans were settled when Mary arrived. And he was right that I was unlikely to find anyone who'd want me to help build his dream with him, in such an equal way. Maybe I really wouldn't find anyone who loved me like this.
Jago did, an inner voice said. He was willing to give up his dream for you.
Gideon, there's something you need to know before you ask this. I'm not who you think.
There's nothing you can say that'll change what I think of you, he said.
The others had almost reached us. In a rush, I suddenly blurted out the impossible. I have a daughter. No one knows. She's nearly 4 and she means everything to me. Her father, we weren't married, never acknowledged her, and she's been sick a lot. She's why I'm here, to get her a better life. I'd planned on telling whoever I married that I was a widow.
I respect you too much to lie, though, because I know you value the truth. So, I finally took a moment to breathe, just as Winifred and Joan walked by, calling greetings. You should know that before you really ask me to marry you. Good night. I hurried away after the other girls, wondering what I'd just done, and leaving Gideon staring into the distance.
We could reach Cape Triumph today.
The proclamation came 2 days later from one of our guides, and it made every conversation stop. Eyes widened, mouths dropped. Startled by the reaction, he added,
But there is no guarantee. The flower festival's tonight, and if it looks like we won't reach the city until evening, we should just camp until morning.
Why? Demanded one of the sailors. After this nightmare, I think we're due for a celebration. A few echoed his sentiment.
The city's chaotic. Try to bring in a caravan like this after dark, in the midst of all that. It'd be a mess. If you're trying to visit someone, they'll probably be out. If you're planning to stay at an inn, there won't be room. And it'd take forever to drive some of these wagons through the streets, as crowded as they get.
But he assured us we'd do our best, and we moved with a renewed vigor. Cape Triumph. Finally. I was well ahead of Mary and eager to get things prepared for her, whatever those things were. Since telling Gideon my secret, we'd had no extensive conversation together. He behaved the same way as always to me when others were around, but we never had a moment alone, and I often spied him watching me thoughtfully. I'd questioned myself constantly over whether telling him had been the right thing to do. But I'd meant what I'd said about honoring how he valued the truth. I couldn't go into marriage with someone like that, under a lie. Of course, if I'd just outright rejected him, there would have been no need to tell him. But I hadn't. His words had made me realize I did want to have it all. Or, well, some of it. I wanted someone I could care about, maybe even truly love. I'd written that off, but Gideon had given me hope in his declaration, and then in the fact that he didn't immediately rescind the offer. But he also hadn't returned to me with open arms, issuing assurances of his continued love for me and acceptance of Mary. As time passed and his silence grew, I began to doubt myself. Could I have it all in a marriage? Or had I once again slammed into another obstacle in Adoria? Evening brought us to a small town called Helm, and here our guides called a halt, eliciting groans. We were only about 3 hours from Cape Triumph, but that would put our arrival right in the middle of the city's revelries. Captain Milford agreed with the guides and had to do a great deal of threatening to keep some of his men from sneaking off. It helped that Helm was holding its own flower festival, and while the scale was probably nothing next to Cape Triumph's, it was a happy diversion for us. The town's bachelors were equally happy to have 20 young women show up. I was tempted to sneak off to Cape Triumph too, but as anxious as I was to get settled there and reunite with Mira and Adelaide, I would see my pretty little birds through to their nest. I pushed aside my worries and let myself actually have fun. A fiddler and piper played music in Helm Square, and those of us in the glittering court fell into the delightful task of teaching the locals some of the complicated ballroom dances we'd had to master. I even showed Captain Milford how to do a waltz, and we were both surprised at how good he was. After 2 hours of dancing, breathless and laughing, I took a break and went searching for a vendor who'd been selling lemonade and mead. As I was about to hand her a copper for my lemonade, a voice behind me said, I'll cover that and have one myself. I looked up at Gideon and smiled. He smiled back and paid the vendor for our drinks. I wondered where you were, I said, as we strolled away. I didn't see you here, and thought maybe you didn't approve of dancing.
I approve, though others don't.
He nodded across the square to where the heirs sat to the side, watching in disapproval.
Seeing as they don't know about my leaving yet, I figured I should keep the peace.
Can we go back to the wagons and talk? My heart accelerated. Of course.
We wound our way through the festivities, back to the quiet of the caravan. I had to stop myself from shaking. Was this it? The moment I officially accepted a marriage proposal in Adoria? That had been the whole point of everything I'd endured, and the possibility of it becoming a certainty was both exciting and frightening. Was I a fool to consider Gideon over some shipping baron or plantation owner? Leaning against a large wagon, underneath a hanging lantern, Gideon sipped his drink and seemed to be preparing himself. After long moments, he smiled at me and said, "Tamsin, what you told me, that was incredibly brave." What? Not that I'm surprised. I've been saying forever that you're brave, and that just proved it. I just wish you'd told me sooner. I can't imagine what it must be like carrying that kind of secret. It must be so hard being away from her. I wish I could have been helping you long before now. My hands began to shake. You mean that? Absolutely. He finished the rest of his lemonade and set the cup down. What's her name? Mary. It's short for Meredith. Mary, he repeated, and I again experienced the joy of hearing someone else say my daughter's name. It's beautiful. I bet she is too. Does she have red hair like you? She does. His grin broadened. I can't wait to meet her. I had to stop myself from gaping again. Gideon? Yes, Tamsin. This doesn't change how I feel about you. I still want to marry you. I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner. I never could catch you alone, and I admit, it was a surprise. But I understand why you'd keep that secret close to you. I imagine you don't always get the best responses from others. That's putting it mildly, I said, still in shock. He shook his head. Like I said, I can't imagine. It must be hard on both of you, dealing with that judgment from others, who certainly aren't perfect. I know I'm not. I made my own share of mistakes when I was younger. I came out of my daze enough to note. She's not a mistake. Some of my actions were, but not her. I'm sorry, he said with a grimace. I didn't mean to... Oh, there I go again, messing up what I want to say. See, this is why I need you, if you'll still have me. I put a hand on the wagon to steady myself. Was this it? Should I do it? Though I still hurt, I would have to move on from Jago, one way or another. So why not with someone who loved me and could support my child too? I had to wet my lips a few times before I could speak. Yes, I will. But just to be clear, you're sure you have the money? My contract could be close to 200 gold, and some months Mary's medicine has cost 3 gold. It won't be this way forever. She'll outgrow this ailment, but it adds up now. I want her to get a good education too, and I promised to send for my parents and siblings. Gideon stopped me by putting a finger to my lips. Yes, I can afford it all, once I get the rest of my money from the bank. I can't promise you 100 silk gowns or real silver cutlery, but we'll live well enough, and we'll live with love. Thank you, I said softly, and I'm sorry to keep coming back to money. It's nothing personal against you, it's just... Mary's a priority, he finished. You have to accommodate that. We have to. I wasn't in love with him, but I did love him a little for that. I can't wait to see her again. I'd like to have everything in order right away. Do you think we can get married immediately? He laughed. Wasn't I just begging you the other night? Of course we can. I'd marry you now if I could. When does she get here? 6 weeks. His smile remained as his eyes grew thoughtful. That's enough time to get everything settled. We can start putting out word about her so it doesn't come as a surprise to others. I really want this to be easy for both of you. No more judgment or censure. I want that too. And that's why I was thinking, your story about being a widow might not go far enough. I frowned. How so? What if someone asks for details about her father? Don't worry, I've thought about that. I've got a whole biography ready. But some might think it's suspicious that you never mentioned her before.
And some might just start overanalyzing the fact that you have a daughter at all.
A sense of unease began to run over me. Where are you going with this, Gideon?
I think you need a new story. I think we should say that she's your little sister who's come to live with us. It'll chase away any doubts about her heritage, and when we bring the rest of your family over, it'll seem more plausible still.
The whole world came to a screeching halt around me. You want me to lie about her?
You were already going to. About whether I'd be married or not, not about if she's my daughter. And it's not really going to work when she calls me Mama. She's young enough to adapt. We'll keep correcting her, and eventually she'll forget.
He tilted his head to peer more closely at me.
Tamsin, what's that look for?
What do you bloody think? I exclaimed. I'm not going to stop being her mother.
You won't be, he said, startled. Nothing can change that. This will just be in how the world sees it. You want to be free of judgment, of people looking down on you.
And her?
This is it. We remove any doubt or suspicion. Make sure it's never an issue. It's especially important going forward with our new venture. If I'm trying to teach people to lead a principled life, I shouldn't have any questions coming up about my own household.
My mouth opened, but nothing came out right away.
Is that what this is about? Not saving us from judgment, but saving face for you. It's for all of us. You said you understood, that you made your own mistakes when you were young.
I do, and I did. I don't judge you, but others will.
I stared at him for a long time, trying to figure out if he was telling the truth. Astonishingly, for the most part, I believed he was. He thought he was doing the right thing.
Gideon, I'm not going to say she's my sister. We've done that in the past on certain occasions, but going forward, no more. I am her mother. She will know that. The whole world will know that. Do you know why I write those letters every damn night? To make sure she remembers I'm her mother. I'm not going to undo all that.
Then you could risk undoing all that I'll have done.
He put a hand to his forehead, face anguished.
You know how carefully we'll have to tread. Any deviation of belief from the Orthodox faith gets scrutinized for heresy. We don't want others thinking badly of my new church. We have to be beyond reproach. If I'm going to encourage people to lead meaningful lives free of corruption and facades, then we have to be a shining example of it.
By creating a facade? I snapped. A spark of anger glinted in his eyes, the only time I'd ever seen it, aside from his quarrel with Roger.
You want to create one too. Remember how you said the money wasn't personal, but that it was essential with Mary as your priority? Well, following my dream, this vision of mine, is my priority. Changing the story isn't personal either. It just makes it less likely that someone will figure everything out. That's good for me, and for you too. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was so used to condemnation and humiliation for my past that this new twist caught me off guard. Gideon accepted me, but not all of me. And it was maddening to have someone so ostensibly understanding be so completely clueless. The fragile hope of a loving marriage I thought I had in my hands began to crumble.
It's not good for me, I said, trying to be calm. It's unacceptable for me. I've compromised on so much, sacrificed on so much, but being her mother is not negotiable. I'd rather have everyone in the world know the truth, that I got pregnant when I wasn't married, than believe a sanitized story about her being my sister.
Gideon threw his hands up. Well, you might get your wish if something goes wrong. I'll take the chance. I won't.
The words fell down like thunder. We could only stare at each other, both too worked up to speak, while the revelry continued in the background. Well, I said, after an eternity, that's that. Gideon put a hand to his forehead and seemed to wilt where he stood.
Tamsin, please be reasonable. I love you, and as her mother, you should do what's best for her. A cool, razor-sharp sense of purpose settled over me, and I shoved away any last sentimental thoughts. You don't love me enough, Gideon. And yes, I am her mother, and I'm going to do what's best for her. Happy Flower Fest, Gideon. Wait, he called as I began to walk away. What are you doing? I paused and gestured toward the square. I'm going to have another dance or two, and then I'm going to get a good night's sleep so that I can get to work in Cape Triumph tomorrow. Tamsin, I came to Adoria for a reason. I turned my back on him and didn't stop again. Thank you for reminding me, Gideon. Chapter 31. We made good time to Cape Triumph, better than the guide expected, considering how late most of us had stayed up. We left at dawn and reached the old fort that stood just outside Cape Triumph's main entrance about 2.5 hours later. A wooden wall, left over from more vulnerable days, surrounded the city, though there were a number of gaps throughout. Relative peace in recent years had lessened the need for constant fortifications. I stared up at it, with a chill running down my back. I'd been in Adoria for weeks now, but until then, every place I'd travelled had been an obstacle to this. Now, the full weight of where I was hit me. Cape Triumph, the oldest Asphridian city in the New World, one that had survived against the odds. Constancy was still trying to establish itself. Cape Triumph had already succeeded. It wasn't a transient settlement. It was a true city. The city. Here, lives could be changed. Most of the main roads in the area terminated at the large gate on Cape Triumph's west side. Its doors were left permanently open, and two soldiers keeping watch from on high gave our caravan a wave as we passed through. I returned their waves with a grin, and then fixed my attention back on the sights before me as we entered. There was so much to see, I didn't know where to look. Winifred squeezed my hand. Can you believe it? She whispered. We made it. We did. Everything's going to be okay now. Better than okay. I swallowed as an unexpected surge of emotion threatened to bring tears to my eyes. Everything'll be perfect now. Nothing about Cape Triumph was predictable. Some buildings were old and finely crafted. Others looked like they might have just been thrown together yesterday. One neighbourhood looked meticulously planned, its streets in a perfect grid. Other sections showed the signs of decades of gradual settlement, built upon and expanded as needs required. There were no subdued colours or attempts at austerity here. Homeowners and shopkeepers painted buildings however the mood struck them. The city made no pretenses to conformity. It seemed to be saying, I'm here, take me as I am. When I could lift my eyes from the array of sights, I became aware of the massive trees just outside the city's perimeter. They, too, seemed to have a message, reminding everyone that Cape Triumph still survived in the shadow of the wilderness. As wondrous as the city itself was, a new excitement began to stir within me. "Where's the glittering court?" I called to our guides when our party came to a halt in one of the city's more commercial districts. The streets were fairly empty, either because of the hour or recovery from last night's flower festival. Those few residents I did see were as diverse and fascinating as the city. They didn't hear me because Captain Milford was loudly going on about needing to get to the docks and check in with the Sailors Guild to report on the loss of his ship. The heirs wanted to find a respectable inn, admitting at the same time that they thought no such thing existed. The guides hired to see our belongings delivered glanced about uncertainly. I tried in vain to get someone's attention, much to the amusement of an elderly man in a raccoon fur cap whittling outside a fine jewellery store that wouldn't have looked out of place in Osfro. "Excuse me!" I finally yelled. The others stopped talking.
You can do whatever you want, but the rest of us are going to the Glittering Court. Mr. Brennan, do you know where Charles Thorne's home is?
Among the travellers not affiliated with my friends, Frank was the only one from the caravan who'd stuck around. And Archibald, of course.
Wisteria Hollow. It's a house not far outside the city proper. I can give you directions or take you there myself.
I'm sure you mean well, sir, said Samuel. But they are our responsibility. We can't let them go off alone with a stranger. You're not going off without us, either, insisted Captain Milford. Thorne needs to know there's a debt to settle.
In the end, Captain Milford sent his first mate and some of the sailors with us to help with the cargo and discuss payment with Jasper. Frank went on his way, telling us in a hopeful tone that he looked forward to seeing us again. He and one of the merchants who'd been with us took enough of their belongings to free up a cart, and those of us on foot piled in, happy to rest before reaching our new home.
Gideon rode in the cart as well, sitting on the opposite side from me. He'd said little all morning, and his eyes were bloodshot, as though he hadn't slept. I glanced at him once, and then spent the rest of the ride talking to the other girls. Our fight still stung. He'd be my friend, after all. But I couldn't spare any more energy on him, not when I was on the verge of getting my life back on track and reuniting with my very best friends. If they were still my friends, Mira would welcome me. But what about Adelaide? I ached to see her, but suddenly feared for my reception. Polly glanced over at me and did a double take.
What's wrong? She asked, misinterpreting my expression. Do you think it's too late for us? That they're done arranging marriages?
Joan blanched.
They can't be. Can they? Will they turn us out?
Everyone was suddenly looking at me, and I shook my head.
Don't be silly. There's always a need for women around here. At the very least, some destitute bond servant will be looking for a wife.
I'm kidding, I added, seeing shocked looks.
Plenty of well-off men still need us, and besides, Mr. Thorne should have gotten our letter by now, and we'll have things prepared.
We took a well-travelled road out of the city, and quickly found ourselves passing through forest and land cleared for farming. Our excited chatter eventually faded away, and we simply watched and waited for any sign of our destination.
There!
Vanessa shot to her feet and pointed.
Look! Look at that house! It's what Mr. Brennan described, and it even has wisteria on the porch!
Said wisteria was only just showing signs of spring renewal. It hung on a stately three-story white house with black shutters and large glass windows. A burly man in overalls and a straw hat sat on the porch, yawning, though he jumped to his feet when he saw us approach the house. An almost comical moment of indecision followed when we'd all assembled on the house's lawn.
"We have been their caretakers," Samuel announced. "We should be the ones to officially present them. Gideon, since this trip with the Ikwari was done at your insistence, you can take the lead."
Gideon jumped, startled at the recognition. He'd been staring off into space and clearly didn't want to take the lead on anything. But after a few moments to compose himself, he managed to put on the pleasant, practiced face of someone who dealt with the public. He stepped up on the porch, flanked by the other heirs. The rest of us followed closely. He knocked. It took seconds, maybe, for the door to open, but it felt like one of the longest waits of my life. The young woman who appeared was about 5 years older than us, and I recognised her after a few moments. Miss Bradley, the Dunford Manor mistress who'd chaperoned the Good Hope. Her jaw dropped when she found what was waiting on the porch. Gideon took off his hat.
"Good morning, mistress. My name is Gideon Stewart. Can you tell me if this is the household of Mr. Charles Th..."
His words were cut off by the shouting of a delighted voice.
"Winifred! Joan!"
A girl I didn't know hurried out of the foyer, bumping Miss Bradley along the way. Winifred gave a squeal when she saw the girl, and the two met in a hug.
And suddenly, the rest of us were rushing forward, spilling into the house as all attempts at orderliness vanished. Oddly, most of the resident Glittering Court girls appeared to be right there in the foyer. If not for their stunned expressions upon realizing who we were, I might have thought they'd been expecting us. Most of them didn't know us, divided as we'd been between manners. The girl who'd greeted Winifred and Joan